Well, hey folks, welcome back. This is Chris with Indaba Africa. Just a few minutes, we should have Ronaldo Hose on here. Ronaldo, welcome aboard.
How's it, bud? How are you doing? Sorry for being late. It's my fault. I'll take the blame for it.
No worries. It's fine. Can folks hear Ronaldo fine? I think it was quiet there for a moment. I think I've got him back now. All right.
Testing so, 1-2.
Yep, it looks like you're coming through good on this end. Hey, Ronaldo, thanks for coming. I'm really glad you're able to do the stream with me. I know you've had a long day, so we're just going to ask you very difficult questions and make you think very hard tonight, okay?
That's perfect, dude. Just hit me. I'll sound like a parliamentarian, so it's fine.
Well, you could sound like a minister on the National Coronavirus Command Council. You'd be right at home there.
Maybe I'll get a raise. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a good point. Hey, so thank you so much for pushing folks to my stream and telling them about my stream. It's really been great checking in and touching base with you ever since that first time I called in. And as you see, my channel is growing pretty quickly here. Not boasting, just a statement. We're up to 1,500 subscribers. So I didn't want to return the favor and invite you in until I had more than 20 or 30 people on the stream. That seemed like I didn't want to waste your time. So now we've got a few subscribers. People are tuning in. So welcome to everybody out there. You're listening to Indaba Africa. This is Chris Wyatt from Central Pennsylvania with my special guest tonight on the feature, Ronaldo Hose, who is a YouTuber, a long-established YouTuber, a disc jockey, DJ, he doesn't like the old term there, and he's also a ward counselor for the Democratic Alliance in Nelson Mandela Bay, the municipality that famously had it the throat of whiteness cut, thanks to Julius Malema and the economic freedom fighters. Now, Ronaldo, we may go into politics. This isn't your stream, so you don't have to feel guilty about talking about politics, and that might come up in the course of it. But
sure.
But let's talk a little bit. Can you tell people just quickly, because there's a few people in here that are international followers of mine who don't know you, a little bit about yourself beyond what I described?
Cool, yeah. I mean, you pretty much covered it. I've been on YouTube for a while, and from the beginning, I've pretty much just made political videos talking about South Africa, because for the international viewers out there, a lot of people thought that 1994 happened and, you know, everybody in South Africa just walked into the sunset, like all hand in hand and all happy. And that dream became a nightmare fairly quickly with, the communist tendencies of the African National Congress, rewriting history and not delivering services. So it's quite weird when you interact with somebody like you, Chris, that is quite knowledgeable on what is going on African soil, because most Americans and especially most people overseas have got this perception that if you are a white South African that disagrees with the ANC, then somehow you are a racist. Because even when I was in the United States, that notion was there. I interacted with a lot of people. They asked me, oh, Nelson Mandela. And then you go, yeah, but that's where it ended. And then Thabo Mbeki wasn't as bad. And then they go, who's Thabo Mbeki? So then you start realizing the limits of the conversation that you're going to have with people. So, yeah, I'm pretty much a politician in South Africa that's fighting for liberalism and pretty much fighting for what I would say the ANC, the old guard, was fighting for in pre-1994. I'm that individual that's still fighting for that amazing South Africa, but we haven't been there yet. We're not there yet.
So Ronaldo, how did you, you were a DJ back in the day, right? You worked the club scene for a long time, if I understand correctly.
Yeah, so while I was studying, look, music has always been a big part of my life, but before I became, before I went to go and study, like I DJed at the local events and stuff, and then that was just a natural transition from when I started studying. I had the opportunity to DJ at a club, so while I was studying, that was like my job to sustain my rent, pay for some of my studies and things like that, and my books and all of those things. So, yeah, I mean, I studied for what was it, 8 years, and I DJed for 12 years professionally in a nightclub, because you get bedroom DJs, you know.
Yeah.
So I DJed for 12 years while I was doing that. So I started on vinyl, then technology eventually moved to everybody playing on a CD, and then eventually transitioned once again to computers. So I started on vinyl, then moved to CDs, and then I ended on laptops, and then, you know, I exited it. I still miss it to this day. I love music. I love the thrill of getting a beat perfectly right, and, beat mixing. So yeah, I wish I could go back to those days because it was simpler days, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. Things are a lot simpler that part of life for a lot of reasons. Well, a thunderstorm has just hit here, so if I get disconnected, it's not the red ants, it's the weather perhaps. So just to give people a heads up. So a couple people either having a crack at your expense or there's some trolls in the stream. I'm not sure which. One of which, they want to, let's talk about steroids. That's silly nonsense. So we're just joking with you there. And then someone else said, are you...
No, that's fine. We can actually talk about that. So yeah, steroids. It's fantastic. I would recommend it for everybody.
And the other was, I think somebody was asking if Ronaldo e-begs because they heard the DA is bankrupt. So anyway, another troll comment there.
That's brilliant. I mean, you see that the beauty of that is if people had actually, if they could read properly, then they would find out that whole notion is bullshit. But it's fine. Welcome to the trolls. Thank you so much for tuning in. And yeah, they, at least they're adding to the viewership numbers. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, no doubt. I don't know if they're just having a crack. I think people are just having a crack with you, not actual trolls. But now you talk about being a DJ. When I was a freshman at university, I worked as a DJ at a radio station on campus. It was a lot of fun. I learned a lot about the studio, how to run it, how to perform on air. And then when I was in the Army, one of my guys across the hall when I was in the barracks when I was young enlisted soldier was really talented. This guy could look at an LP, look at the artist and tell you, listen, okay, this is the right song. Here's where you mix it. He knew the beats. He explained it, taught me all kinds of stuff about music. It was amazing. He was fantastic. And I really enjoyed doing it back then. But then CDs came along and, you know, I kind of lost interest after the LP era. So what was that like, that transition for you going from LP to, you know, digital? I mean, it's not quite the same.
It wasn't. It felt like so. How can I put it? It felt like it took the soul out of it because even like, because remember, I was a trance DJ, so I didn't play like rock or anything. So the bass that you get.
Wait. Trance. Is this a sexuality thing? What's trance?
Yeah. Sorry. Trance music. You know. trance. It's a lot of doof doof. That's what
okay.
I can say.
Is it like techno?
Yeah, it's a lot faster and more integrated and detailed than it's trance music. Just you can it's not like reference to being post-op or pre-op. You know, I can promise you that. But yes, so the bass that you would get out of putting the needle on the record would be very different to a digital sort of version of that. So yeah, it did feel simplified because every step when technology kicks in makes it easier for people to do it. So then it loses like that time and effort that you have to put into it in order to become really good at it. So these days with a laptop, you can just tap a button and it would automatically do like the beat mixing. So that is obviously, you know, I prefer vinyl because it takes a lot of skill. And also the scratching is just so satisfactory when you can do it like that.
No, I agree with you. That's the thing for me. When they first started coming out CDs, that's kind of the time because of the events in my life that were changing. I was going back to university to get a commission as an officer that kind of drifted away from it. But to me, I was like, CDs, how are you going to scratch? I mean, that's I know there's a technique for doing it, but it just seems strange to me. So you said you studied 8 years. What were you studying?
I studied when I started, I did psychology. I went up until I finished my honors degree. I applied for my master's and then I didn't get in because our university could only take like 5 master's students because that's the capacity that they had. And they obviously tell you that you're too young, you know, I mean, who's going to listen to a 23-year-old psychologist, you know? So then I decided, well, I can't do anything with the honors degree in psychology. So that would have been like 4 wasted years. So then I just did a little bit of research and found out, well, you know, you can use that and then bridge the course over into industrial psychology, which is like it's human resources, but it's not really human resources. So I branched over into that. I did my honors degree in that. In the United States, you guys don't have honors degrees. It's our 4th year, which is like a more specific, it's a post-grad pretty much. And then I did my master's degree in it. And yeah, then that allows me to be an industrial psychologist, which is hiring and firing of people. It's compensation management. It's pretty much looking after the health of a company. That is pretty much what it is.
Now, did you get any opportunity to do that in the private or the government sector before you went into politics? I mean, did you actually work it or? Okay.
I still do to this day. Obviously, I've got some clients overseas that I consult with regards, because I set up their employment strategies and their compensation management packages that they've got. So I still do that to this day. Yeah.
So I think based on the comments, I misunderstood something you said. Of course, comes down to pronunciation. So I thought you were saying trans music, but someone said trance like this. Is that the wrong word, trance, as in you're like a zombie trance? Is that what the music was? Or is it trans as in transatlantic?
No, it's trans like you've got it there. It's trance. The way that you guys say trance is wrong. We say trance music. So trance music is pretty much, if I had to sound like an idiot now, I'd do it. It's like, that's trance music. It's really, it's a very detailed, like fast beat, like about 132 BPM type of music.
Okay, cool beans. I got it. So that makes a little more sense to me there. Yeah. We'll see if we get some questions coming in from folks. But in the meantime, I thought that I would put this on. People have been talking about us having dueling hats tonight. So here's my new cap that came in yesterday. What do you think of that?
That is so, like, can I tell you, that cap is like, when I see that, all I think of is, what is that South Park episode where it's like, America, fuck yeah. Right. You know, it's like proper.
It's like, what is it, Team Spirit, the movie? With the little Kim Jong-un figures.
That's it. Right. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, so anyway.
So that says, so obviously he's like, what Trump has done is his first slogan was Make America Great Again.
Yep.
And then now, because he's up for re-election, obviously he's playing on the fact that he's made America great and now it's important to keep America great.
Yeah, no, exactly what it is. As I told people on my earlier stream, I've only ever given money to a political campaign three times. Once because I knew the presidential candidate personally, that was John McCain, when he ran. So I just supported him, even though I didn't agree with some of his positions. And then Newt Gingrich, because I was just so hot full of Obama that I would give money to, you know, the Boston Terrier that walked by if he was running for office. And then this time, because I'm all in on the Trump train at this point, especially with the behavior that's been going on this year. So you went from doing this sort of thing, and then at what point, what inspired you to get into politics? I mean, a lot of white South Africans really shy from politics, and a lot of them don't even vote. Not surprisingly to me, but surprising to a lot of people. So what got you towards politics, and when did that happen?
So my channel was pretty much just consistently bitching about the current state of South Africa. So from 2008 until like 2011, it was always me giving my opinion on what was going on in South Africa. And then what I would find is quite often is I would find people say, you know, well, you know, we agree with you screaming and shouting and being upset and saying this and this must change, but what are you doing? And then, you know, like the first time I read it, I was like, that's a good thing. Why am I not involved? Why don't I have any skin in the game? What never crossed my mind is that it would affect my neutral point of view. So that led me to ask the question, and then I did research. I obviously knew the various different political parties and which one spoke to the core of my beliefs. I started getting involved with the DA, and obviously assisting them with their campaign or social media presence. And I joined the DA in 2011. And then 5 years later, I stood as a candidate for, as a PR counselor first, and then as the ward counselor for Ward 2. And then, I'm now a public representative.
So what's a PR counselor? That's a term that the people outside South Africa probably aren't familiar with. Ward counselor we kind of get because we got wards here in the U.S.
So, a PR counselor is a proportional representative counselor. That means that for instance, as an example, I'm sure you've got probably something similar in the United States. Let's say in Nelson Mandela Bay, well, we have 60 wards, right? So in our metro, we've got 60 wards where people can run to become the ward counselor. If let's say, for argument's sake, that at every single one of those wards, the ANC or an opposition party wins with one vote over the other political party, that would be unfair then when you look at who represents who in council. So what the PR councillor does is it takes the total tally of votes in the municipality and then gives that party, based on the amount of votes they got, representation. So if the DA got, let's say, 49.9% of all the votes in this metro, but they still didn't win each councillor position, then they would still have 49.9% representation in council. So a PR councillor is somebody that got voted in because of the public vote, but people didn't specifically vote for them, so they are on a party ticket. So they are ranked from 1 until 60, and then let's say the first 40 on the PR vote got in, then they would elect those councillors based on that list. I hope that explained it.
No, I think you explained it pretty well. So the way I understand it from what you're explaining is that all parties that reach a certain threshold get a proportional representation within the government. So that's kind of like Germans have a similar situation, but you have to pull 5% in Germany. If you don't get 5%, you don't get a seat in the Bundestag, for example. But there you have to stand the candidates. But so in this case, what happens is you could win Nelson Mandela Bay, win control of the council, even though you don't win all the wards, because you just need to win enough proportional votes and wards that you take over, correct?
Yeah, so I think unlike the American system, it's whoever gets the majority vote wins, even though you don't get enough councillors. So if the DA didn't have one councillor, ward councillor, but they got more of the votes, then that would mean that they would be the government. So I think in the United States, you guys work on a different system there, where even if the president gets more, or let's say the Democrat and the Republican candidate, let's say even the one gets more votes number wise, that doesn't mean they'll become the president.
Well, but that's the exception, and that's only for that office, for the president. When you run for sheriff in this county, or you run for county commissioner or mayor or governor or congressman or state representative, that's all on popular vote. You get selected based on the popular vote. So if you win by one vote, first past the post, you win. So 50% point and 1/10. So that's all you need. But yeah, for the present, we have a very unusual system that was designed because of the federalism of our system, so that the states would not be neglected. So, when the country came up with the Constitution, we had 13 states at that time, and they had this thing called the Articles of Confederation, which was an abject failure. It had such a weak central government that the states quarreled amongst themselves and they controlled everything. So they came back, reset, came up with the Constitution, which was inspired by a lot of stuff that happened in Europe. The Constitution was drafted, and they came up with the Electoral College because of the 13 states, four of them were large and populous. The rest were very small and not particularly wealthy. So you had New York, Virginia, Pennsylvania, and Massachusetts. And there's no way that the other nine states would have joined the Union and agreed to the Constitution and ratified it unless they were protected. And the way they were protected was with the Electoral College, and then the way the Senate was designed, so that every state has two senators, whether it's Wyoming with 600,000 people and California with 35 million people, they both get two senators. But then the lesser house, the Congress, the House of Representatives gets it based on popular vote, and it's based, every representative represents the same number of votes roughly everywhere in the country. So like Wyoming only has one member of Congress, and California has like 54. so that's the difference here. But yeah, normally you just vote for people direct on. So that was 2011. You got interested in it, and I guess if I'm understanding correctly, you were inspired or kind of pushed because people were saying, listen, you're just ranting about stuff. What are you doing? Why don't you get involved? And so do you feel like you've been able to make a difference by getting involved in politics? Has it changed things from your perspective, or are you just better informed, or are you helping people? What do you think?
Yeah, look, I mean, definitely on a ward level, I've initiated change. There's a lot of difference, like things that I've been directly involved in to assist my residents. And even on the committee that I sit, which is Economic Development, Tourism and Agriculture, as well as Sport, Recreation, Arts and Culture. Well, Economic Development, Tourism and Agriculture, and then Sport, Recreation, Arts and Culture. Both of those I've had, important inputs in that has sort of shifted the way that things might be done. For instance, the rugby team here, because I see you wearing a Stormers rugby jersey there. As you know, the Eastern Cape has got a rugby team, but it's a rugby team that obviously provides the rest of the country with the best players.
Here we go.
They do. let me just... Siya Kolisi is from the Eastern Cape. He is the captain of the Springboks. And if we had enough resources, we would have kept him here. But because our funding wasn't good, we couldn't keep him here. So I've had an influence there in which, we've allocated funds to try and keep amazing players in the Eastern Cape with our own franchise. The stadium is another one where we've went. I mean, I'm not, I can't do the dollar-rand exchange rate because it changes every like 5 minutes. But we went from spending four times on our stadium to now a fourth of what we spent on it. So that's a saving of, I think it's 230 million rand that we are saving the city and the taxpayers. So there are various different things that, yes, I've had a hand in and that I'm very, very proud of. Is there something yet that I can point to and say that was me in my ward? Yes, there's a couple of things in my ward that I can point to and say, one day I can show that to my child and say, you know, that is what your dad did in the ward.
So for you, from what's been going on from a personal level, because people see you on the internet all the time, watch your show, watch your stream, and obviously your constituents are seeing you because you're out about doing things. I saw the drone footage you provided of looking at the reservoirs recently, which was interesting. I see they're a little bit low. So for you personally, what's been the big impact of the lockdown? Because for some folks, it's been quite bad. It's obviously adjusted your life. I mean, what is the direct impact for you and your family?
Well, you see, this is where it annoys me, because as a public servant, I'm getting paid, irrespective. So, and then the problem is that the ANC government and the EFF, or the EFF political organization party, they're giving a lot of politicians a bad name. So I know that there are many, many ANC councillors and EFF councillors that has done absolutely nothing during this lockdown. So they've done nothing to work for their salary. Mm-hmm. Whereas I've been out every single day. I've been formulating policy. I've been assisting. I've been trying to, as the opposition, we've been trying to guide you know, the local government as to what to do. So the lockdown hasn't impacted me financially personally, but what it has done is it's made me really frustrated with the state of the metro and also the state of the country, because we are looking realistically at a contraction of our countrywide economy between 8 to 10%. And we already have an unemployment rate, that, an official one, that's 39%. Okay. Youth unemployment is over 50%. I know that you guys over there lose your minds when your unemployment rate goes to 6 or 7%. Now, in South Africa, it's 39%, the official one. Remember, these are people that are currently looking for jobs that can't find jobs. There's a different rate also that's sort of hidden between the cracks or lost in the cracks. That is people that has given up looking for jobs, as well as the people that are still. And that number is like 43, 44%. And then the youth unemployment, which is over 50%, tells you in what trouble we are in this country.
Well, you know, point well taken. Americans tend to lose their mind if unemployment climbs above 6 or 7%. That's quite a big deal for a healthy economy. And it's something in South Africa you guys lived with a long time. But right now, we have 39 million jobless claims since the end, or since the start of this lockdown nonsense here in the States, and not even the entire country is locked down. So that's over half the population of South Africa who people were working and not working now. You extrapolate that out over the size of families, loved ones supported, we're talking probably 100 million people directly affected by losing jobs. It's pretty crazy, and a lot of it, from my view, is unnecessary. But
you see, I'm quite loved, right? You can obviously see I'm loved. I mean, well, obviously.
Of that, there's no doubt, because I think I told you yesterday on the stream, as soon as I posted this thing, there are already like three dislikes on it, and the stream was scheduled for 2 days later. So,
Can I just say this? Can I say this? And I want to emphasize, I love the fact that I've got people that absolutely despise me. I love it. And I'll tell you why. Because it means I've stood up for something. So I don't care if people call me the weirdest things under the sun, or try and insult me, or try and belittle me. It's like water off a duck's back. So if that makes them feel better about themselves, then I'm happy for them. And it makes me feel warm and fuzzy inside, because that means I live rent-free in their minds. So thank you. Thank you for watching this when you despise me. It's greatly appreciated.
No, it's good stuff. It was interesting when I went on Willem Petzer's his stream, and then he came on mine last week, which was a great experience. When I was on his stream, I went back and read the comments afterwards, and you should have seen some of the stuff people said. This guy's a CIA stooge. He doesn't know anything about Africa, and going on and on. It's, you know, you're never.
So, gonna... so, so,
Okay.
So, sorry, I've got this bad habit of interrupting, and it's your show. So, finish your train of thought, and then I'll give my input.
Sure. Well, gee, thank you for letting me do that, right? No,
I'm
so
sorry. I'm sorry.
no, that's okay. I'm just teasing you because I did it the other way around. No, so all kinds of comments. I mean, most of the comments were very there's some good questions people ask and very complimentary things on Dylan Petzer's program, and he was a great host, and I enjoyed having him on my program. But on his program, an awful lot of people sort of seemed to be triggered about what I was saying. A number of people attributed things to me I never said. They inferred things about me that I never got to, and I guess in some respects, you obviously can't please everybody. So when you do this, you have to expect that going forward. Having served in uniform and having people work for me and had to direct people, I've discovered long ago that you can't please everybody. So did that develop for you at some point, or did you have a thin skin at some point when you first started?
Yeah, look, I mean, I think like most people, when you start off on the internet, you want everybody to like you, right? You and usually the bad comments stick a lot longer than the good comments. So if you get 100 positive comments and one negative one, then you seem to focus on the negative one. And I've quickly learned, I mean, especially politics have learned me that learned me has taught me that not everybody is going to like you, and that's fine. I know that I'm absolutely despised by the ANC. I'm absolutely despised by the EFF, and then I'm obviously despised by the far right in South Africa. And there's a good reason for that, because many years ago I shut down a very popular right-wing South African blog called South Africa Sucks. And those people were mostly expats that left the country, and they absolutely hate the fact that they had to leave. And they were very racist with not all of them, but a lot of people on that platform was very racist and dropped the K bomb. They would post pictures of dead black babies saying success, those type of things. And I shut down, I think it was about 50 or 60,000 people. I shut that blog down. And ever since then, they've had a hard on for me. And yes, I'm sorry if this is a family-friendly stream, but I think that's the best way to describe it. And yeah, I think what you'll see, and this is a pattern that I've seen on South African YouTube, is that you'll get these individuals that latch onto specific YouTube channels. And that's not necessarily the fault of that particular YouTuber. Like Willem Petzer produces great content.
He does.
Sometimes there's things that I disagree with them on, and then I'll send them a WhatsApp and I'll say, Willem, I disagree with you on this, right? The problem, however, is that people will watch one of your videos and agree wholeheartedly with you, because let's say in that video you decided to go off on the ANC and the EFF, and then they think that is what your entire channel is about.
Yeah.
And then as soon as you start talking, like for instance, I'm pretty sure that on Willem Petzer's live stream, whenever you said something anti-ANC or anti-EFF, the guys were clapping and going crazy. But the moment you start just criticizing perhaps something about a white individual, then that shifted. And those are people that I don't want on my channel, so they can tech, like my cap says. I'm not interested if your criteria for whether somebody's got a good or bad argument is based on whether they insult a specific race or not, then you're not the type of person that I want to speak to. I don't want to be associated with. So anyway, long
Yeah.
story short is that I know that there is many people here that dislike me, not here, but people
Yeah.
in South Africa that dislike me and despise me because of the fact that I am not 100% anti-black or anti this or anti that, you know. And to those people, I can say, well, you can sack. I'm not interested in you and your opinion anyway.
Yeah, no, I think that sums it up really well, Ronaldo. That's kind of it's interesting how people just draw things out, like you said, because they only hear a little bit. So I never advocated for or against the concept of a rainbow nation when I was on that stream, and I mentioned that the Western liberal world has a view of 1994, the 27th of April 94, and see South Africa through a lens of the rainbow nation. And I got castigated by some people that didn't like what I had to say because they said I was advocating for it. I wasn't advocating for it, and I wasn't calling against it. I wasn't even talking about the Rainbow Nation. I simply mentioned it in passing as part of an important point of showing how the world views South Africa.
Chris,
Yeah. Yeah.
don't fall into that trap. Don't fall into that trap.
No, that's
Tell
good
those
advice.
people to tech.
That's
You
good
don't need
advice.
to explain yourself to anybody. As somebody, I mean, I've come to know you, on like as a friend. We've had discussions, and I can say without a shadow of a doubt that the time that you served in Africa And just some of the videos that you've brought out speaking about South Africa has contributed more to the narrative than any of it put together have contributed towards a dialogue in South Africa. So don't let those people get to you. Tell them to check, because they don't, they're not interested in your argument. Because as an example, I watched that stream. You said that if you were asked, who would you vote for if you were South African? As soon as you mentioned DA, those people lost their minds and they got triggered. So the thing is, irrespective of whatever your reason might be for why you want to vote for the DA, it's not good enough because you just mentioned the DA's name. So please, like, just switch off whenever you interact with a South African like that. Because I would pretty much say that it would be on par with one of those woke individuals in the United States that protests on how dare you assume my gender. That is exactly the same time a person that you are dealing with in South Africa, or more than likely, they're not even in South Africa. They live in Australia, they live in Canada, they live in the UK, and they pissed off that they had to leave this country, and every opportunity they have to badmouth the country, they will do that. So don't pay them any heed.
No, it's great advice. Thanks. No, I wasn't stressing over it. I just was bringing it up as a topic to discuss about how trolls and how people behave. I have an interesting story about, I don't know if I shared it with you, but I shared another stream, and I'll hold off on now, about LinkedIn, about how I was attacked as a racist, because I had the temerity just to, and it was fine, because on LinkedIn, I just...
No,
but I respond on LinkedIn, because at the time I was still a serving officer with my uniform and my post. You know, I can't just leave that up there. And I don't delete people's comments. I just let them show their backside. So I would respond and rationally. And after a couple of days on LinkedIn, all of my followers just started hounding the trolls and chased them away, which was kind of satisfying. But anyway, so really quickly, let me do a little housekeeping here, folks. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Indaba Africa. This is Chris coming to you from Central Pennsylvania, Chris White. And my special guest on today's special feature is Ronaldo Hose, a YouTuber, a DJ, I guess he doesn't like disc jockey, a DJ, and a ward counselor for the Democratic Alliance in Nelson Mandela Bay, the city that was once led by Athol Trollope. In the interest of full disclosure, one of my favorite politicians in South Africa. I'm sad to see him not on the scene. Hopefully he'll come back at some point. But Ronaldo Hose is my guest tonight. Thanks for tuning in. We are finally able to get this stream going. He seems to be holding up pretty well, even though he's had a pretty full day and been working all day, but he seems to have a bit of energy there. So with that, I think someone asked a question about, I don't know if you want to talk about this. It's not a South African issue, and this is really talking about you, but Freitas ZA asked a question about my opinion on the George Floyd murder. Have you heard about that in South Africa? Have you caught that? What's happening in Minneapolis?
Yeah, I'm assuming that it's that photo of that cop with his knee on the guy's like neck holding him down, right?
Yeah, that's the one. Yep.
Yeah. Apparently there's been riots. I don't really follow. I used to love American politics and politics overseas, but because I'm so my 9 to 9 at night is at the moment politics. So the last thing that I want to hear is more politics when I get at home, you know. But I did hear about it, and I did see that it was a massive story. And what I can see is that the United States is still also having something that is really prevalent in South Africa at the moment, and that is clearly that race is still an issue. I think that in the United States it pops up every now and then, whereas in South Africa it's like constant. It's a nonstop. So yeah, I mean, I've heard about the story. I don't know too much, but if what is being reported on in the media is accurate, then those police officers, it's quite simple. They need to be taken to task, and they need to be held responsible.
You know, absolutely agree. They were asking the question to me, but I thought I'd just get your view on it. There are riots in Minneapolis. There are riots in Los Angeles. In Minneapolis, of course, the governor of Minnesota has been chastising people for not social distancing, yet law enforcement is not rounding these people up who are breaking social distancing and burning cars and looting stores, which, anyway, it's...
There's never a good enough reason to riot. Like, we had the same thing in South Africa with the fees must fall. So university students was upset that universities were still teaching colonial type of education, or there's a statue of Cecil John Rhodes at the university. Yeah. And then instead of peacefully protesting, what they did is they burned stuff. They caused millions let's put it this way. They caused tens of millions of dollars of damage to universities. They would burn down a health center that assists the students to try and make a point. And I've always held the view, and even during that period, I said that, look, unless the government is honestly trying to kill you because you are peacefully protesting, then I can understand you using violence against violence. But if you're protesting because of something that went wrong and your method of doing that is stealing TVs, how is that assisting? Because I saw some of those riot photos, people looting shops. How the hell is stealing a television or a coffee maker protesting the government against the way that they're dealing with black individuals in the United States?
No, absolutely, it doesn't. And several folks have said in the chat that once the cuffs are on the restraints, then that should be the end of it. And normally that would be the case. But anyone who's been involved in law enforcement dealing with someone, not just those intoxicated or high, but also those who are sober, getting the handcuffs on and restraining someone doesn't mean that's the end of it at times. I'm not talking about this case in particular. Now more information is coming out talking about that this cop that had the knee on his back supposedly knew the guy personally. They worked together in the club. So who knows if there was a personal thing. We don't know. We need to let this thing play out. But the rioting definitely is not helping anybody, and that's a shame when that sort of thing happens. But it's part of a narrative that is prevalent here, and it props up all too frequently, but it's on a daily narrative you have in South Africa, a similar sort of situation. So I certainly empathize with that. Let's see.
Yeah, that's like a normal day in South Africa, I mean, yeah. To be real. I mean, that's why, you know, like it's major news over there, and I understand why. But in South Africa, I'm not every day. I mean, I'm being facetious. Yeah. But we've had since the Roads Must Fall sort of protests. We've had about it's like every single time of the same time every single year we've got a protest because oh wait, we had a protest last year. That means we must have a protest again now because of the same exact reasons. So,
well, that's like South Korea for decades had the student protest every spring. That was just what they did every year. That's what they did. And those could be violent at times, but it's check the calendar. It's time for student protest. You know, and they'll find an issue to protest about. So the St. Ledger person in the chat says that he's a farmer in Northwest. Well, that's awesome. I love Northwest. I've been through there many, many times. I lived in Habaroni, for those who know, in Botswana, and would drive from the border crossing there, Tulkwang, down to Zeerust and Rustenburg and on to Pretoria and Joburg quite frequently. So I know the area. So interesting to see that St. Ledger is a farmer up there in Northwest. I hope that your farm is doing well, particularly in light of all that's going on. This is quite crazy here. So, Ronaldo, we haven't talked ahead of time because we didn't have time because Germ was stringing out his words because he was intoxicated on the other street.
As always, nothing new.
As always, I'll tell you what, the next time there's a lockdown, if I'm in South Africa, I'll find Germ's house because I know I'll find all the booze I need till the apocalypse is over.
Exactly.
So we didn't talk ahead of time, but if this is out of bounds, let me know. I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you think that later you might have ambitions to maybe move up to the provincial level or maybe on the national stage if you hang around politics long enough, or are you a short-term politics guy just trying to make change for now?
No, look, I mean, here's the thing, right? I took a pay cut to become a counselor. So it's not – what annoys me is when people make that connection that, oh, you're in it for the money. Like, no, actually – and that is where that whole joke with the 4 degrees comes in with me. It's because I've always used that to say, listen, I've got 4 degrees. I can get a job mostly anywhere in the world if I really wanted to. So I could leave South Africa if I wanted to. I've had opportunities to go overseas and work. I've turned them down because I want to remain here and I want to be the change that I want to see in this country. The question's definitely not out of bounds. Do I have ambitions to one day perhaps be in parliament? Yeah, I would love to be in parliament. But at the moment, I'm quite happy to serve my constituents and my residents in my ward. That is what I signed up for, and I'm signing up for it again. So at least for the next 5 years, if I'm successful, I will remain a ward councillor. And yes, I will contribute, and hopefully we can do it as a government that is in charge rather than being in the opposition benches.
I'm getting all kinds of comments from Kyle and Ice offering to be my forward reconnaissance to find Germ's house for the booze. So I thought I'd just point that out. So anyway, yeah, no, it's No, I asked because I've been.
I'll just I'll WhatsApp you his address.
Well, that'll work. We'll find it. But I know I asked because while I was still serving on a couple occasions, I was asked to run for Congress in the U.S. And while I appreciated and I was humbled by the people asking me to run for office, I refused it because I thought there were still things I could do on active duty and serve on that, and that's what I wanted to do. But now I just
well, you shouldn't. You're gonna be our ambassador. You're gonna be our ambassador to South Africa. So don't no. Just wait a while.
Well, I'll have to get involved in the Trump campaign to get that political appointment so that Lana Marks can return to handbag manufacturing.
Please take her. Please, we don't want her. Please take her.
Apparently, there's a lot of Americans that feel the same way who know about her. So. Yeah.
Listen, let me just ask this because I've got a question, right?
Yeah, go ahead.
So she says that she on her application, from what I've read, because I once she made those outlandish statements that she did about how brilliant the ANC is and all, I did a bit of research and I saw on her application that she said she speaks three South African languages fluently. And I can tell you now that she's lying. Yeah. She cannot speak Afrikaans fluently, and she definitely cannot speak isiXhosa fluently. So is that grounds alone for her to be brought back and at least lose her position because she's blatantly lying? She was on a South African Afrikaans TV show, which was obviously scripted because the guy, Waldemar Pelzer, interviewed her, and you can see that he said, Goeie dag, hoe gaan dit met jou? Which means good day, how's it going? You know?
Yep.
And then you could see she was like, she obviously studied it the night before and she went, dankie, dit was fantastisch. You know, the way that she was speaking clearly indicates that she's not fluent because there's a difference between saying I can understand a language or I can speak fluently. There's a big difference between the two of them. So yeah. I'm just wondering if that's not a good enough reason to ship her back.
Ek het nie, sorry, I was just reading my Afrikaans script. No, it's not. Politicians lie all the time, and politically appointed appointments do that as well. But remember, folks, in South Africa, if you're based there, historically, our ambassador to South Africa is a political appointment. So that's typically some sort of reward for someone. It's not always the case we sent someone that's the best choice to go there. That doesn't mean we haven't had career foreign service officers there, but historically it's a plum assignment. People love to go there. And that kind of dovetails into a question I got a little while ago, someone asking what my favorite city in South Africa is. And when I give it, some people are going to clap and some people are going to be like, are you crazy? But my favorite city in South Africa, for very specific reasons, is Pretoria. I absolutely love Pretoria. I love the High Veld. I can go there and understand Afrikaans and Tswana, and I just like the environment. I like the jacarandas when they're in bloom. I like other parts of South Africa. I mean, you know, I love Cape Town, but it's a great place to visit. I don't know how easy it is to live there. I've been there many times on a visit. But for me, Pretoria is very much feels at home, and I get along with all the people there, black and white. And so, but anyway, so that answers that question somebody asked earlier. But obviously, I'm going to guess your favorite town is Nelson Mandela Bay. It's probably not safe for you to answer anything else.
No, I mean, look, I've been lucky enough to travel the length and breadth of South Africa. And I would say that, look, cost-wise and just you know, traffic-wise and natural beauty-wise, I would say that, like, Port Elizabeth is definitely underrated. Mm-hmm. Is it the most beautiful city? No. I think Cape Town is hands down the most beautiful city, if not the most beautiful city in the world. But then again, I would say that, you know, and now obviously I will forget, but where's God's Window situated? People in the comments can help me. That is the most beautiful region of South Africa. Wherever God's Window is, somebody will give it in the comments now. I think it's Mpumalanga. I believe that is the most beautiful region in South Africa. But other than that, I mean, I love Port Elizabeth. Traveling from one part of the city to the other part in peak traffic will take you no more than 20 minutes. And that is with 1.3 million people, 1.2 million people living in the city. I mean, where can you have that? You can't have that.
Nah, that's a good point. Some people are saying Mpumalanga. Someone else said Eastern Cape, but most are saying Mpumalanga. So I'm guessing that's where it's at. And I think I know what you're referring to. Comes to mind.
It's Mpumalanga, and it's the most beautiful area. Like the roads are terrible. It's got the worst potholes I've ever seen in my life, but it's the most beautiful area in South Africa.
All right, so now I'm going to ask you this, and if you say New Jersey, I'm going to cut your stream off. What's your favorite place in the U.S. based on your travels here? What did you enjoy the most?
I loved, you know what, if I could probably settle in one spot in the United States, it would actually be in Nevada. Okay. I would probably settle in a place just outside Las Vegas, like Henderson. I would love living there. Like, so a place like Henderson, and if that wasn't possible, because I don't love living in, like, the madness, so... you're going to not like this, but I would say I always forget the name, man. It's that place just outside of across the river from lower Manhattan.
Staten Island.
What's it called? No, it's not Staten Island. It's in New Jersey. It's where's Cake Boss recorded? Wherever Cake Boss is, yeah. That Hoboken. There we go.
Hoboken.
I would love to live in Hoboken. Yeah.
Well, I get your point. Your point is you're close enough to the craziness and everything that you ever want to do, but you don't have to live in it. And I think that's probably what you're getting at. Yeah, I know.
Exactly. Well, I loved Henderson. Henderson was amazing because it's just outside of Las Vegas, and it's you can drive to Area 51. You can drive to the Hoover Dam. Mm-hmm. There's so much to do there.
No, absolutely. I get where you're coming from. Like where I'm at here, it's peri-urban, it's rural. This county's 450,000 people, but physically it's a huge county. The state capital is 25 kilometers away, so it's a 15-minute drive to get there. D.C. is a two-hour drive if you have to go to D.C. Baltimore's an hour and 45 minutes. Philadelphia's 2 hours, and Manhattan's 3 hours. So if you need to do things, it's not that far away. Yeah, so it's a good spot. Good natural beauty. We've got mountains. They're not the Drakensberg. It's the Appalachians, which are much older, you know, for erosion-wise. But so it's kind of beautiful here, nice. Lots of forest, lots of hunting around here, that sort of thing. People here do cling to their God and their guns, and so I kind of appreciate that. Oh, that's not a stereo stumpy. You're falling down the job, my friend. So Henderson, I suppose you get a job work for Amazon. That's their main warehouse out there in Nevada at Henderson.
Yeah, look, I mean, we stopped over in a lot of towns, but my favorite, like, and you're not going to like this, but like my favorite place that I've been to outside of South Africa is still Montreal. I love Montreal. I mean, I think that would be my first prize if I could live there. But then again, I wasn't there during the winter. So I'm pretty sure that if I had to be there during a Canadian winter, my mind would shift. And the reason I would probably choose Henderson is because, like, well, it's, I mean, what's the coldest it gets in Las Vegas or in Henderson? It's probably not that cold.
No, it gets cold in winter, but you know, you're not outside that much unless you're a rancher or something like that, or a miner, silver miner, something like that. Most people, and if you live in Vegas or if you go to Vegas, you don't even have to be outside. You can go from casino to casino and almost never step outside, so you don't even feel the weather. And which is nice because a lot of the year it's brutally hot there, so it's nice to be able to stay under in the cool and not get out in the sun. I was going to the Vegas Sevens there for a few years in a row before they ended, and that's actually what's behind me here on the wall is the Vegas Sevens. That's the last time they had it, 10th anniversary, and this year it was in Los Angeles, and just for that reason I didn't go. I don't like Los Angeles, so I didn't go. And I was supposed to go to Vancouver for the Sevens.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I were the one to go to Vancouver, and I had the tickets, and I actually bought tickets to two hockey games and hotels, flights. And then I owed the Army a commitment that I promised for them, and I thought I was supposed to see them on Tuesday. It turns out they needed me on Sunday, so I had to cancel it last minute. And then, of course, that's the last of the HSBC 7 series, so that was the end of that. But anyway, yeah. Mm. So have you been to other parts of Africa, Ronaldo? I mean, have you seen anything else or just South Africa?
Just South Africa. I'm not interested in any other African country, if I'm honest with you. Like, I love a culture shock. So usually when I travel, the most fascinating place that I've been to was Oman, which is a 3-hour drive away from Dubai. Yep. So they still, what's the correct term? They've got their prince. So it's not like it's similar to Dubai, but they've kept their traditions and they haven't gone like 100-story buildings up in the air. So they've kept everything, as traditional as possible, but they've got the infrastructure like a first world country. And everything is done on a handshake there. And that is where one of my contracts were that I did industrial psychology with, or at least, was with Omani Oil. So, it was fascinating because obviously they had to move into the first world, But you, with signing contracts, with doing human resources and that type of stuff. So that was an absolute cultural shock. And I love that. So I don't want to go to a place like Australia or the UK where the culture shock would be minimal. I want to experience a completely different culture altogether. And Oman gave that to me, and that was brilliant.
You know, Oman is quite different. When I was based in Tunisia, one of my colleagues went there for one of his professional travels and just raved about it and said it was quite amazing, stunning place to visit. It's kind of cool. So in the chat, there, a couple things come up. The chat, Christo said that went to Las Vegas. It was brilliant, really enjoyed it, planning on going back next year. Yeah, no, it's amazing. Vegas is something else. I don't gamble, so for me, it's quite entertaining. I just go for shows and for the rugby, of course, and to watch other people gamble. It's a highly entertaining thing to watch other people gamble.
Exactly, especially if they lose. If they win, you get kind of jealous, but if they lose, then it's like, oh, it's fascinating. It's my money that I didn't waste. But yeah, I also don't gamble and I don't drink, so... Imagine this guy planning, because I mean, our two main spots when we went to the United States was New York City and Las Vegas. Those were the two ones. So now imagine the South African that doesn't drink and that does not gamble going to Las Vegas. It was fascinating. Fascinating.
No doubt. No, it's kind of like Gold Reef City there in Soweto, where you see these people sit there pulling that one arm band. It's just, you know, for hours pulling the coins out of there. It's crazy. And then I think was it Ludwig Hoya asked a question about the Amish. He's talking about here. So yeah, the Amish are from this area. They came from the Rhine-Palatinate and from Switzerland back in the 17th century, came to America in the 18th century. They settled here. They settled in Lancaster County, which is about 45-minute drive east of here on the other side of the Susquehanna, which is a major river dividing the state. So the Amish, that's where you have to be very careful. And even around here, because people were riding horse and buggies everywhere, and where there's a lot of them, you'll see signs to warn motorists who aren't familiar with it. But yeah, they're very prevalent around here. The Amish, most of the Amish still speak German as their first language. 3 centuries later, they learn German first because their Bible's in German. Now, I speak German fluently, and I have to pay close attention because it's 17th century German. It hasn't really grown up like the modern German has. But then we have Mennonites as well. And if you go back a century ago, about 1900, there were about 5,000 to 8,000 Amish and Mennonites in North America. Today, there's 750,000, 775,000. And they don't grow by bringing new people into their community. They grow by reproducing. So that's pretty significant growth for that community. Can you imagine? It's quite big.
But isn't... Okay, so as an outsider, I'm assuming I can say, because I'm ignorant, isn't that a lot of inbreeding, though, with all due respect?
No, it's not rude or disrespectful or a naive question. In fact, that is a problem in the Amish community. You have a condition where people get 6 fingers or 6 toes, and it happens because of, so that is, in fact, a true story. And that is a concern of theirs because they come from a rather small group of people, just several thousand initially, and reproducing. Now they're all the way across the country from Pennsylvania through the Midwest, all the way out into places like Idaho. You find the Amish and Mennonites. Now the Mennonites are a little more liberal. The irony is that the Amish are more conservative, and people always thought they came first, but the Mennonites came first. And then the Amish broke off of them because they thought the Mennonites were too liberal. They weren't conservative enough.
Jeez. So, have they made me?
Oh, speaking of which, let me pull that up before we leave because this is something I put up. So, all right, Ronaldo, I'm going to put up that's your political compass from yesterday. I took a screen capture. That's where you came out. You're just right down the middle, man. You can't make up your mind what you are other than you're libertarian. You see that? Is it on the screen?
Yeah, dude. I mean, I'm definitely, it's over there. I can see that obviously when it comes to the political, like sort of, yeah, what is it? The social libertarian or authoritarian, I'm definitely like solidly left or, you know, economic. Oh, sorry. Let me get this right. Like, I'm looking at it now. So the horizontal aspect is economy. And then so my economy is pretty much like dead center, but I'm definitely a social liberal without a doubt.
All right. So where do you think I come out? You've talked to me. You've gotten to know me a little bit. Where do you think I'm going to come out?
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, so, but here's the thing, though. I know that you support Trump. I don't know, dude, but we agree on a lot of things, though. So I think that you will obviously be more on the vertical line. You'll probably be more upwards, but I think that I think you fall into the left quadrant. I think you do.
All right, here we go. Here we go.
Let's see. I'm waiting for you.
It should come up any second now.
Oh, wow. Jeez. Okay.
So libertarian on economic issues, but more conservative when it comes to political issues, I guess, is where that falls. It's a little further to the right than I expected, but I think it had something to do with the number of the questions were really, I don't really feel this way, but it was my only choice on several of those questions. But I just thought it'd be interesting to compare the two of us there. So the reason I mentioned this is that when I first started following your stream and your channel, there are things you said that I disagree with, and I told people that's one of the reasons why I watch your channel. I mean, if I just believe everything the guy says, then I'm just a sycophant. Not that that's bad, but there's no space between us, so we're just in an echo chamber hearing the same sort of thing. So I think debate and disagreement is healthy, and I think this is a good example of it. If we both answer that questionnaire honestly, look where we both came down. Now, a lot of people look at us and assume we had the same views, and I think on many respects we do share the same views. But obviously, probably the reason I slide a little more into the purple there is because of my experience in uniform and the things I've seen and done. I suspect that's probably why I'm there. But I just thought this would be interesting to compare.
It's quite amazing. And you see, that is what I love about my channel, and what I can obviously see on your channel too, is that it's not an echo chamber. There are quite a number of YouTube channels that both of us have experienced that people are literally entrenched in this echo chamber where your views are amplified because so many other people agree with you. And that is very dangerous. So I love the fact that I've got people that respectfully disagree with me, because there's a difference. If you're going to just come on my stream and call me an arsehole and call me somebody that steals charity money or make wild claims like that, then obviously I'm going to block you, because I mean, how is that a constructive debate? But what I've had on my channel most of the time is people that disagree with me, but they do it in a respectful manner, and that actually allows me to also change my viewpoint and reconsider my beliefs, because I have publicly changed my viewpoints on a couple of things. One of them would be that you should not go to jail for the words that you utter. So I do not believe that you should go to jail. I used to believe that, if you call somebody a K word or you commit hate speech, that you should be harshly punished. And because somebody came with reason and gave an argument that improved my point of view, I agree now. I say that, you should never ever be jailed for the words that you utter. And that would have never happened if I wasn't an echo chamber. If I wasn't an echo chamber, my view would have been amplified, and I would have been like, no, never ever would I see in your point of view.
Yeah, no, I think your point is right. We learn and grow from interacting with others if we have an open mind. I think that's what matters here. Now, Hank Klopper said I'm a lefty, but he's just joking. He said it's because I'm left-handed. That's where. So, and oh, that was
I
funny.
also see, I see there's an interesting question. They ask, where can they get this test? You can literally just type in political compass into Google or political compass test, and it will be the first result.
Yeah, check it out. Do the test. Oh, that's from Sean, I think. Yeah, Sean. Sean was kept trying to. He knows me from LinkedIn. He was trying to capture me. I think when I first met on LinkedIn, he's trying to capture my live streams and kept missing it. And I was doing my videos that I prepare on a premiere basis so that I could be there to interact with my audience, which meant I'm staying up till 1:30 in the morning, so that way people in South Africa aren't getting up early to watch my video. And so he kept missing it, and he came in. And he goes, "Oh, I'm finally here." And I said, "No, dude, you're here in a premiere. This video is already made. I'm just answering questions." So he's finally made into the live stream, which is kind of cool. And then someone asked me this question, is ETT, I think it was, about what's the consequence of South Africa's military decline. I think that's a topic for another day, but I'll just, if you don't mind, Ronaldo, I'll just answer something about it very quickly.
No, for sure. It's your channel.
Yeah, no, but I mean, you're my guest, John. I don't want to keep you lingering around. It's been a long day, and I don't want you to run out of vape
It's
juice.
all good, dude. It's all good. I'm good. I'm good.
Okay. All right. No, so the consequences of South Africa's military decline are already baked into the system, ladies and gentlemen, from my perspective. The South African National Defense Force has probably declined about as far as it could decline, so far as operational readiness and preparedness and capabilities. It doesn't mean it's an incapable force, doesn't mean it's not capable of doing things. Some of the peacekeeping missions that it's been involved in Africa, the forces have gone there, have done a remarkable, bang-up, professional job. Others, quite a bit of a national embarrassment taking place and some of the things taking place there. But the real problem with the South African National Defense Forces is underfunded, and it's also a jobs program and a patronage machine. And those things really impact on its capability from a military standpoint, and also from an institutional standpoint, from as a national institution. So I won't go any more on that. We can talk about that on a live stream later on. Ronald, if you got a comment on what I just said, or you think that's off base, just let me know. Or if you agree, if we have an echo chamber, that's cool on this issue.
No, that's all good. I just I'm I want to say though that I'm very, very impressed with your channel growth, and I'm very happy that you've experienced the channel growth that you have. I mean, 1,500 subscribers, and I mean I'm sure you've made videos in the past, but you've actually put a lot of emphasis on your videos over the last like 3-4 months, even if it's not shorter. And so congratulations on what you're doing, and it's so refreshing to hear actually an American that actually that's quite knowledgeable on what is happening in Africa, and more specifically South Africa. So thank you for your contribution, and keep it up. And I mean your channel deserves at least 30,000-40,000 subscribers already, so hopefully you'll get there soon.
Well, thanks a lot, Ronaldo. That's very kind of you. I really, really do appreciate that. For those who don't know, I'm kind of an early adopter. I'm like Inspector Gadget. If a gadget comes out, I buy it, I try it. So like LinkedIn, I was a member within 90 days of the site being created. With YouTube, I had an account back in 2006. But since I was a serving officer, it didn't feel it was appropriate for me to put videos on there. So the only thing I had was one video from a trip I took to Iceland of a waterfall. And I stuck it on there. And it has 4,300 views. And I have one subscriber when I started reanimating my channel here. And I did it in February. And a couple of people told me, said, hey, don't do too many videos because, you know, people won't follow you unless you do fewer videos, which seems counterintuitive. But I understand where they're coming from. So I just did a couple of videos early on talking about Africa and then about South Africa also. And I had 20, 30 subscribers. And then I said, you know what? If people are going to watch me, they're going to want to know about more content. And I see from other people's channel, you need content. So I started producing more content. And then I went on your show in the call-in. I remember that day. It was pretty cool because I'm not boasting. This is you and I chatting. That day I called in. You were taking calls for about, it was a Saturday, it was a couple months ago. You were taking calls for about 2 or 3 minutes. And then I called in. You and I chatted for like 25 minutes, the last half hour of the show.
Yeah.
And the chat was blowing up. Who is this guy, man? Who's this colonel? You got to get him on. And then you very kindly said, you know what? I'm going to commit. We're going to do a once a month show. And if the colonel's willing, come back. And so that kind of jazzed me up too.
Yeah.
Because I was like, wow, people want to hear what, you know, what's being said. So that kind of got it going. I was on Roman's program. Roman really wanted me on because people were going to his chat. When you got to get the colonel in, you got to get the colonel in. He didn't know who I was. He's like, who's the colonel? Somebody said KFC, but that was the wrong colonel. But anyway.
Bad type of colonel. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that's the kind of give you heart disease and high blood pressure. but you can get a streetwise meal, get a good deal on that. Anyway.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, no, it really has. I mean, basically, the real effort has gone in since mid-March. So mid-March, mid-April, mid-May. So 2 months, this has really gone from 31 subscribers to 1,500. So thank you all so much, those who tune in, those who have an interest. And when I had Willem Petzer on, there was someone that lives in the UK who followed that program. I picked up some subscribers from Willem when I was on there. They came over to my channel. And then I hosted him later, and I picked up some more subscribers. So that was a good day, kind of like the day I did that show with you, that first, you know, regular schedule program we did. Mm-hmm. But then whoever that was in the UK, they shared my stream with a bunch of people on Facebook. And apparently this person is very active on Facebook. And then it started blowing up, and you know, more and more comes. And the thing about this is, once you get a critical mass, your video appears more often, people hear about it, and the word gets around. So anyway, I've really enjoyed it so far. I hope it's making a difference. The idea was to make this part of my consultancy, but right now I'm just kind of treating it like a public service because of lockdown. I really feel bad for all the people who don't get a steady paycheck. I mean, I get a retirement paycheck, so I'm not going to starve. Plus, I've been saving and investing for a long time. And my lockdown, while I have a lockdown here, it's not brutal like South Africa. So my empathy is for people in Africa suffering under this. Now, the good news is Namibia and Botswana have raised the restrictions, and life is a lot better in both those countries now with almost no cases. But you guys, I got to get a dictionary out and read through 27 pages of what's going on. You know, you can exercise, but no, you can't from this hour. And anyway.
That's what happens when you have a government that doesn't know what's going on, though. It's a perfect case of a government trying to hide its the failures that it's committed over the last 26 years. And that is why channels like yours are so important, because people can listen to a South African bitch about South Africa, but when it comes from someplace else, of somebody that has the experience that you have, it adds a different dimension to it. I think that majority of South Africans are under no illusion that the only people that's going to save South Africa is South Africans. But it always helps to have a friendly voice across the pond that just uses that message and tells people that might not be in the know. Because, I mean, if you think about it, and I'm not trying to, well, I will compare the two, because I feel the ANC is as destructive as the National Party was during apartheid, if not worse, considering that we live in a modern era and they're still doing what they're doing, and still millions of people are starving, don't have access to basic necessities like running water or a flushing toilet. And I think that channels like yours add a tremendous or plays a tremendous role in just educating people out there, because that's what happened during apartheid. The reason that apartheid eventually fell was because of external pressure and just because more people knew about it. But it still took the people in the country to do it. So I think it's just a case of getting more eyeballs and ears to listen as to what's happening in South Africa, and not just thinking that all of us walked into this, you know, towards a sunset hand in hand and everything ended like a lot of people want to believe.
No, thanks, Ronaldo. And one of the reasons why I did it too is because I think the same sort of reason. You can be South African and complain about it, but people are going to look, especially if you're white South African and it's abroad where they have this view of the past. They're just going to maybe dismiss people a lot of times when they're outside of South Africa. And even in South Africa, I think it's refreshing for South Africans of all races and ethnicities to hear somebody that knows a little something about South Africa is willing to talk about it. And it just, I think that, I do agree, I think that makes a difference here. It really, now on my channel, while there's a lot of bitching about the ANC of late, with good reason, that's why the videos are that way. If you follow my videos and you follow it, I don't just complain about things. I offer solutions. You know, you go back to my videos like on South African Airlines, before they went into business rescue, I said, this is the things that they can do to turn this into a profitable airline. Even though I disagree with the state-owned enterprise, these are things they can do. But one of the recommendations, of course, was to privatize them. And I do that for a number of things. South African wine industry, when I talk about that, I talk about things they can do to keep it going. Anyway, because it's easy to complain about things, it's harder to come up with solutions. So, I mean, I try to interject what I'm doing with not just complaining, but also with some solutions and ideas. And are they right? They could be. Are they wrong? They could be. But if people don't even look at them, then you're not going to get anywhere.
I agree with you. And then obviously, you know, added to all of that is just the fact that people need to realize that you are talking about the ANC because they're the government. If you were talking about the ANC and the ANC wasn't the government, that would be a different thing. So a lot of people always say, well, why do you, you know, bitch about the ANC so much? Well, it's because the ANC is the government. Yeah. They are the ones in charge. If let's say the EFF was in charge, I would do the same thing. If the DA was in charge and I didn't agree with a lot of the things, then I would also complain about it. I've complained publicly about some things that were said by DA councillors, DA members of parliament. So as much as I am loyal to my party, you should never, ever be loyal for life, because you don't know what might happen with the party. That's why you will find any good politician will never ever make a commitment to say, I will support this party till death, because then that is when you should ask the question whether that person's loyal to the party for a salary or whether they're loyal to the party because of ideology. So there's a big difference between the two.
Well, and I agree with you wholeheartedly that one of the challenges here is that it's really not about loyalty to the party. That's part of the problem. I think that's part of the problem with the South African system, is that the way it's set up is that the party comes first in many respects, and I think that's backwards. It should be the nation, the people that come first. So in here, as a serving officer, I had been a Republican as a young man. I left the Republican Party, not because I was required to, but because I didn't think it was appropriate for a military officer. Even though it was allowed, I think it was appropriate for me to be in a political party, because people knew that it would send a message, and I want people to vote their own way as long as they vote. But now that I'm out, I'm a registered member of a political party once again. But talking about that, so when the DA won the 2016 municipal elections and formed coalitions in Nelson Mandela Bay, in Tshwane, in Joburg, I was so excited because I thought maybe we're going to get somewhere now. Things might change. The DA can prove they can deliver services, and maybe people born after 94 will see what's really going on and not vote based on identity, but vote based on ideals. And that's what I was hoping. But if you follow, now I wasn't on YouTube, but I was very active on LinkedIn with lots of posts, taking news articles, offering analysis. And if anyone that followed me on LinkedIn knows, I castigated the DA when it started to lose the plot. I was brutally honest about where I thought the DA was going, what was wrong with it, from my perspective, from the outside. So I think the bottom line there, we're both saying, is it's, at the end of the day, it's really about the ideals and the vision, not the party. And it's, so you have to, if you're not honest about your party, then you know, you're not honest about your party and you're suspect. But if you're honest about your party's failures and your party's successes, then I think you're in good stead. So it sounds to me like that's kind of where you're coming from.
Yeah, I mean, and I know we're going over time, but just to add to that, I think 2019 served as a perfect example of something that I've held very dear to myself. And that is, and I've actually asked my subscribers, and most of them answered not wrong, but they answered wrong according to me.
Yeah.
The question that I've got is, do you exist as a political organization to practice your ideals? And if that means you never govern, then you never govern. Or do you exist as a political party in order to regain power and to become a government of the country? And a lot of people said, well, you do it to become a government. And no, I think that is a perfect example of showcasing where the DA went wrong. Because the DA, during the 2019 election, moved away from ideology and tried to become a government, not at all costs, but at a price that I don't think voters was willing to pay.
Yeah.
And they moved away and moved a little bit away from our ideology and were more open to sort of race-based policies and that type of stuff. And we saw what happened. So that re-emphasizes the importance of you join a political party because of your ideology and what you believe. And if that means you never ever govern because it's not the popular thing, at least you stay true to yourself. If you start manipulating the ideology to suit that you should come and become a government, then that is problematic. And that leads back to my point that if the DA moves away from its liberal values, then I will very easily leave the DA. I'm not married to this party. I believe in this party and I trust in the party where it's currently. But if it had to move away from its ideology, then I will move to a party that suits the liberal ideology that I believe in.
No, I'm with you completely. That's one of the reasons why I couldn't possibly be a member of the Democratic Party in this country. They've completely abandoned their ideals. They abandoned the middle class. They abandoned all sense of reason to go to this progressive left agenda, which is where the ANC is in that direction. And they're not serving their own constituents. And so for them, it's about retaining power. Orange man bad, anything we can say about Orange man bad to stay in power, anything we can do to divert this fruitless waste of energy on an impeachment that distracted this nation, the Russia collusion nonsense, all of that stuff really harmed us domestically and internationally. And they did it to destroy Trump, not because they cared about the country. And so that's kind of frustrating. Well, we have run over a little bit, Ronaldo. Can we get one thing from you? Is there one thing we don't know about Ronaldo that you can tell us that maybe nobody knows about?
Yo, dude, I've been on YouTube for 12 years. People know most of the things. I don't know. Like maybe people know my favorite color is black. I think it's a dead giveaway.
Something
people don't know. Like I actually had a modeling career. I think that's what people don't know about me. Like so, I did a modeling stint for a while. So, yeah.
Okay. What's that movie with what's his name? I can't say
Zoolander.
Yeah, Zoolander. Well, I think on that we're probably going to end it here. So, somebody's being funny. They said when you were 16, Ronaldo. No, he was a hand model.
Yeah, exactly. And then this happened with my finger, so I can't hand model anymore. So,
pull that down. That's gross. I don't even want to know what happened there. Anyway.
My friend is cricket. It's cricket. That's what that is. It's when the ball hits you straight on the tip and it rips off your tendon and it breaks your bone.
Yeah.
And then people along the pitch, everybody that thinks that they're doctors, they try and pull it back and they think it's a dislocated finger and they start pulling on that. That is what that does.
Yeah, I got hit with a baseball right here in this middle finger, right on the tip, similar sort of thing. Fortunately, it didn't break because I was catching and pulling the ball this direction, so it took some of the force away. But yeah, I thought it was fractured. It really hurts, so I know how that goes. Anyway, Ronaldo Host, thank you so much for being my guest tonight. I really appreciate it. I know it's been a long day for you. Thanks for sending folks over. I will put my cap on so I can tip it to my guest. Thank you so much. By the way, Ronaldo, remember I called you out, not intentionally, but you were showing your cap a long time ago, and it says probably made in China. Look where this one's made at, man. Can you see that? Let me see. Come on.
I know. You have to read it. I won't be able to see.
Made in USA. Yeah, made in USA.
Oh, wow.
Actually, not even a Chinese hat. You got to love it. We actually got this. Trump's got them. Yeah, I got this in the mail today before I say goodbye. So Joe Biden voted for China in 2000. The political campaign is well underway now. I'm covering up my address there. anyway, yeah. So this is what's going on now as we prep for November. All these things are coming out. So anyway, well, ladies and gentlemen, good.
Well, before you say goodbye, let me just say that I'm not a fan of Trump in the sense of how he acts as a president, but I have to say that it's going to be a slaughter. Yeah. He is going to annihilate Biden without a shadow of a doubt. And the people that he surrounded himself with, they've implemented brilliant policies. So I have to say that my criticism of Trump when he won was, yes, big shit's coming. Mm-hmm. And he's made America a lot better. I mean, the economy doesn't lie. Well, before COVID, but the economy doesn't lie. Everything that he's implemented has been great. So expect... what was the result the last time, percentage wise, between the two in 20? What was it? 20? You guys have an election every 4 years, don't you?
That's correct. Neither one got 50%. Hillary got 49% of the vote, and Trump got 48-something% of the vote. The difference was just a little bit, but she won by a couple million votes. But that's entirely because of California. She got 8 million votes in California. He got 4 million votes. So that was a 4 million popular vote spread. If you take California out of the equation, Trump won the election by 2 million votes in the popular vote in the rest of the country.
Because I predict like a 55%, 45%. That's what I predict.
Yeah, in January, I would have said it would have been even higher. Would have been a shocking result. 49 out of 50 states he was going to win, and I expected him to take at least 55 to 57% of the vote after the bogus impeachment trial was over. COVID-19, with the constant effort by the media to tell fairy tales about what's happening, and also a lot of people out of work, it's hard to say. But I still think he's going to win. I don't think there's any question of that. The question is whether the Republicans can regain control of the House, which they were on path to do. Now it's up in the air. See, the last time in 2018, they lost the House, but they lost the House because of the Russian narrative. They were able to run the Russian narrative and claim that Republicans were allies of Trump and they were guilty by association. And that's how they won. And they talked about this red wave. It was more like a red trickle. It wasn't a wave. It was a low cap that came through. This time I called it the blue wave, excuse me. I was calling this the red tsunami in January in Congress. It's not going to be a tsunami anymore, but I think the Republicans can still take the House. And once they have all branches of the government, then we'll see what happens. Unfortunately, in the past, when they've had all branches, they've been like Democrats, and they're more about being in charge than actually governing. And so hopefully they'll govern this time. And I think with Trump, maybe...
I'm pretty sure they will.
Yeah.
Oh, well, it's going to happen. People are hot for. I think the Democrats need to get a wake up call like the DA did, but like on a first world country bitch slap way. And I think hopefully, because I mean, the candidates are terrible. The candidates, it's like for the last 15 years, the entire Democratic Party was built around Hillary Clinton. And now there's not one adequate or suitable candidate. The fact that Bernie Sanders ended second, I mean, we all know how shit scared Americans are of socialism. And the fact that he ended second as a out and about socialist was scary. So, yeah, I think that they're going to get the bitch slap that they deserve just to put them back on track.
What's even scarier is Bernie Sanders is not even a member of the Democratic Party. He just caucuses with them. So he ran for the party's nomination. That would be like Julius Malema running for the chair of the Democratic Alliance. That makes no sense.
Ah, dude, it's crazy. It's crazy.
Absolutely no sense. Anyway, well, Ronaldo, thank you so much for the stream. Hang on there for a minute. I'm going to go ahead and say my farewells. I'm going to slide you off the screen, but I'm not shutting your mic off. Anyway, so he gave a thumbs up, ladies and gentlemen. Hey, thanks so much for tuning in tonight, folks. It was my pleasure to host Ronaldo Host tonight, an exciting and interesting YouTuber, DJ, and politician from South Africa. I hope you enjoyed the stream. You're welcome to agree or disagree. Please feel free to leave comments at the bottom of the stream afterwards, or if you watch it later on, you're welcome to do that. Positive, negative, I read them all. I try to respond to them all. If you write something abusive, I might find it entertaining to respond, but there's no need to put abusive comments if you disagree or you don't like something. Also, please be sure to smash that like button, because the higher number of likes you get on the stream, the more likely it is to appear on somebody's channel on YouTube so that you actually get more promotion. So I appreciate that. You don't have to like the video. If you just found it thought-provoking or interesting, I hear a door shutting on Ronaldo's side. There's some banging going on there. We put us anyway. So, go ahead, Ronaldo. What was that?
No, I'm sorry. It's we putting the heaters on because it's winter here. So putting the heat on.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Anyway, so yeah. Please be sure to smash that like button. If you're not a subscriber, you just tuned in for the first time, you found this remotely interesting, please push the subscription button right there. Become a subscriber. It's a free channel. It's no paywall. It's not monetized at the moment. Although that may be coming at some point. I'm debating that. But anyway, I'll always, during the lockdown, provide these free streams so people have something to turn to when they're bored with YouTube and Hulu. And the last thing, of course, is I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Thank you so much. And look for more videos about Africa. I cover all of Africa and other geostrategic issues around the world. Thank you so much for tuning in, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great stream. I've enjoyed my guests. My thanks to Ronaldo Host and for his patience and for rescheduling for tonight. God bless. Hang in there. We're all going to survive this lockdown and this hysteria over a virus that is nowhere near what the politicians around the world have been telling us. Ladies and gentlemen, have a pleasant evening. And until the next time. Oh, by the way, tomorrow. Yeah, the next time. Tomorrow, 11 o'clock Eastern Standard, I have Comey Clue, who's a Ghanaian-American economist, on my stream for the regular weekly scheduled stream. That's 11 o'clock Eastern Standard, 5 p.m. in Gaborone and in South Africa, 4 p.m. in London and Abuja. We'll be talking about debt in Africa. So if you're at least been interested in that, we're going to talk about the real story about what the deal is in Africa with debt.